All right. Hello, everybody. We are back with another episode of Step by Step.
With some skips along the way.
All righty, y'all. I am your host, MGMTA President Gabriel Gray. I'm here with my co-host.
Miss Jess Windsor, MGMTA President-elect.
So, as our component acronym, it's so hard to get off the tongue.
Right, though. It's so true.
Yes, no, and no disrespect to our other components. We love them, but MOTA is so much more easier than MGMTA. So many consonants.
We love our components, but it's a lot of
Yes.
consonants.
All right, everybody. Well, we have a special guest joining us today, a very valuable part of our MMEA executive board. And he is our Young Composers Project Chair, Mr. Richard McCready. Say hey to the people, Richard.
Good morning, everybody. It's so nice to be here with you today. I'm looking out the window. There's snow everywhere. It's beautiful, but it's good to spend this time with Jess and Gabe and with everybody today. So thanks for having me, folks.
We're glad to have you on, Richard.
Absolutely. Everybody, I have interacted with Richard ever since I was elected to the board back in 2022. I've also had the honor of presiding over a past session of his. And when I tell you, one, Richard is fun. Very, very hilarious and cares so much deeply about the profession and his contribution to our board. So we have him on today to talk more about the Young Composers Project, which submissions are open at this time. If you're connected to the MMEA emails, if you're subscribing to that, you have probably seen that. And if you follow MMEA on Facebook or Instagram, you have probably seen the releases of the submission window. Richard, if you could remind me, how long is the submission window open?
Well, the submission window, as you said, is open right now, and we go all the way to February 28th. Now, when I say February 28th, it's 5 o'clock on February 28th, so it's close of business. So, if you're interested in submitting a composition for the Young Composers project, please do that before February 28th. In fact, I would get on it before February 27th. I think that any time now would be good to get started on that. So we're very much looking forward to looking at compositions and listening to them and seeing what our incredible students are doing in Maryland. We've been running this Young Composers Project for 3 to 4 years now. And a couple of years ago, we had, quite a lot of submissions. And then the next year, we got a whole lot of submissions. And this year, we're hoping for a heck of a lot of submissions. So the more we get, the healthier it is. And it's just a wonderful project out there for so many of our young composers in Maryland.
Excellent, Richard, and thank you so much for that. And of course, we want to thank our sponsors, Focusrite Novation, for your support with this project as well.
Yeah,
So,
we were
yes.
able to come on board with Focusrite Novation a few years ago, who have been very generous, not only in providing us with financial backing, but also providing some of our adjudicators. When we adjudicate through the compositions, we make sure that there is a great blend of people looking at the compositions, not only educators, but also industry professionals. And that's where Focusrite Novation come in. They provide us people from their company to look at our compositions. And that's really nice to have people that are from outside of the education world looking at that. Focusrite is a company that creates audio products. Novation create MIDI products such as keyboard controllers and the like. And so there's a lot of great wonks and brilliant minds in those two companies. And they're all musicians as well, which is wonderful because they're in the audio industry. So having Focusrite Novation there to help us is just a huge, huge boon to the Composers Project. And we love getting their feedback. And I hope that the students enjoy getting that feedback as well from people that are out there working in the industry.
That's really cool. I think this is a really cool project to get something going, especially with the fact that you have adjudicators coming in that are in the industry. They're not just some people that think they know about this. They understand the material that they're doing and the medium that they're doing in these projects from top to bottom. So Gabe and I know about Young Composers Project. You, of course, know about Young Composers Project, but let's say that I'm a first-year teacher in the state of Maryland. If you could, I like to say, Sparks note the Young Composers Project into a minute or two, tell us about the Young Composers Project and how students can get involved.
So we are looking for students of all ages and all experience levels to come forward and show us their creativity. We have a number of categories for our compositions. Notation, that's the one that most people think about when they think about composition. And we tend to have, used that word composer with people who write down dots on the page. And in the classical world, we certainly revere those people who have been composers, the Beethovens, Bachs, and Brahms of this world. And with the advent of so much notation software that's out there, it's wonderful for students who are reading music and learning to read music to have that experience of writing in a computer and having the computer play the music for them. This is huge. I remember when I was a kid, the first time I was able to use notation software and to have a computer play what was in my brain was wonderful. And when we were talking 15, 20 years ago, you needed expensive software. You needed things like Finale or Sibelius. But now it's quite incredible what notation is software is out there, such as Flat IO, which is completely free. For students to use. And of course, we've got NoteFlight, and you can purchase that through Music First, which is an extraordinarily powerful piece of software, MuseScore, and other notation that's out there. So, notation is one of our categories. And I would say that's probably the biggest uptake among students is notation. But importantly, I want to stress that. You can do this without having to pay, that there are free options there. And let me come back to that in a minute as well. Then we have a digital audio workstation category. And again, 15, 20 years ago, if you wanted to produce something within a digital audio workstation, you had to pay a lot of money to buy Pro Tools or Cakewalk or one of the workstation packages that were out there. Now there's so much online, and you can be doing work in Soundtrap, which again you can purchase a school license through Music First or BandLab, which is wonderful free online software. Things like Audio Tool are out there. There's lots and lots of options for kids to get involved without having to outlay lots and lots of money to do this. And then our third category is songwriting. And this is my favorite category because I write a lot of songs myself. Grab a guitar and grab a journal and write some lyrics and make some chords and put a melody to it and sing it for us. And a lot of kids that are able to play guitar or play keyboard or play other songs, they will submit that play other instruments. They will submit songs into that. So then we look at the number of entries that we have in all those categories, and we have a team of adjudicators who will listen to everything, and they will give feedback, positive feedback, for absolutely every single composition or production or song that we get in these three categories. And that will be sent right back to the students. And then we select some that we think are really ready to go on to our master class. And we invite students then into an online master class, which is one of my favorite things of the whole project. So in a master class, and our master classes this year, by the way, are May 3rd and May 4th. And so we have a Zoom meeting with all the young composers, producers, and songwriters, and the adjudicators. And we listen to everybody's composition or their production or their song. And we look at the lyric sheet, or we look at the score, or we look at the production within the digital audio workstation. And yet again, the adjudicators have a chance to feedback. And sometimes that's adjudicators who particularly didn't get that one in their list of ones that they were looking at, but will feedback and give the kids some, you know, some feedback, positive ideas. And what I love about the Zoom masterclasses as well is that the composers, the young composers, producers, and songwriters use the chat to lift each other up as well. So that is wonderful. One of the things I love about the Young Composers Project is that it is available to kids throughout Maryland. It doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter whether, you know, you have a well-resourced music department or you're hanging on by a thread and two toothpicks. This whole thing is free to students. Software is available free. Everything is done online. So there's no worries about having to travel to Central Maryland to audition or to have to, you know, to travel so that you can be at the ensemble or whatever it is that we, you know, these other opportunities that we have. This is for everybody and it's for all ages. And one of the lovely things about the masterclass is seeing, you know, an 18-year-old giving a 6-year-old positive feedback on what they've done, or vice versa, seeing a 6-year-old give positive feedback to somebody who is 18 years old on what they've done. There's such a vulnerability to composition because you're really putting yourself out there. That when, you know, all these young composers and producers and songwriters are together, they really just have a way of understanding it. They're saying, I have been vulnerable in writing a song, and I love your vulnerability in writing a song. And it creates a wonderfully beautiful bringing together of creativity within children, and also the creativity of our producers and our sponsors and our industry professions and our adjudicators that are all part of this whole thing. So it's a beautiful, beautiful community together.
I love this. I love this project so much. When I started hearing about it more in depth, it was something that I think my students could definitely get involved with. And Richard, you need to get out of my head, because my next question I was going to ask you was, if I were to be, this would be something that would be great for secondary students, like middle and high school, but if I were to teach early elementary, where would this go? And you already answered my question. So to confirm with you, the specific grade band that we have is for kindergarten through 12th grade students. And it could be within their school system. It could be within a private studio or community organization. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It can be through anything. And it can be individual or group as well. So particularly in, you know, elementary general music, if you're working with a class on a composition project, which is a wonderful thing to do together, then the class can enter their composition. And so that is, you know, that's a really wonderful thing that we can do. We're not, you know, we don't have to just have individuals. So people can work together. And of course, this is something very common in songwriting. People working together do incredible things, okay? And we look at great, great songwriting partnerships through songwriting history. Simon and Garfunkel, Lennon and McCartney. There's no reason why we can't have people work together to create things. So it doesn't have to be individual at all. So we accept, as you said, submissions all the way through 12th grade. And we don't have a quota of how many kids we accept from elementary school into the showcase, how many we take from middle, how many take from high. We don't have a quota of how many notations we take. We don't have a quota of how many productions we take from digital audio workstations. We don't have a quota of songs. We basically take what we think is good and ready to be in a showcase and in a masterclass. And then we sort out who goes into what masterclass, basically according to where, you know, the general most of the interest is for those masterclasses. So last year, we actually separated that out into age groups. By the time we came to the master class, we had one master class which was all kids up to ninth grade, and then we had one master class which was 10th, 11th, 12th. The year before, it just happened to fall that we did one master class which was all notation, and the other master class was all production and songwriting. It just, you know, there's no set formula. We just want to encourage everybody, and then we sort it out from there.
What I'm getting so much of is the accessibility that this project provides for our student composers of, again, all age types, regardless of who they are tied to. And yes, this is where, you know, a lot of things in music education or education in general are really trying to step and tap into.
Yes.
And it's such a great thing to see. It's a great thing to know. And we definitely would like to help push that out even more. I mean, the growth has been evident these past couple of years, and we are very, very excited to also help out by having this episode and really giving people a much deeper understanding of the origin and the mission of the Young Composers Project. Richard, a question I have is, how long has the project been in existence under MMEA? I mean, I've known it as long as I've been a board member, but I'll admit before being elected to the board, I wasn't fully aware of it. So how long has this project been in existence?
It's about 4 or 5 years, I believe. I was part of the small group that initially piloted it, and then took it on myself as the chair about 4 years ago. So I think we had 1 year where I was not the chair, but I think we're either into our fifth or sixth year, and we've had Focusrite Innovation since I have been chair. One of the things that Focusrite Innovation really does help us with is this idea that students don't have to pay to submit. They take that away. I believe that all students deserve an opportunity to be involved in all aspects. And if there is something we want to offer to students from MMEA, I believe that all students should have access to it, regardless of geography or regardless of social status or regardless of race or color or creed or sexuality or anything. I want to remove all those barriers. And so having focus right there means that there's nobody out there that says, you know what, I just can't afford the $20 fee because, you know, I just don't have that right now. I want everybody to be able to achieve. Otherwise, my thought is that when we provide opportunities of privilege, we don't want to just give the privilege to those that already have the privilege. It hurts me when I see opportunities when we say that we give opportunity, but who we're giving that opportunity to are those that already have the opportunity. So my goal really with the Young Composer Showcase was to make sure that the opportunity is there for everybody.
And as a former student who had those struggles growing up financially, I think this is an incredible project for all of our students because of exactly what you said. We have students from across the state of Maryland who have these beautiful, imaginative, creative minds, but they know almost everything in life comes at a cost. And so they understand that, you know, the things that come with life, there's gonna be some sort of cost, and you're kind of paving the way of saying, no, that doesn't have to be the case. That doesn't have to be the case for your students.
Right.
I think this is a great way to incorporate creativity in your classroom. A lot of people have, a lot of new teachers I've found have a hard time of understanding, like, well, how can I incorporate creativity? How can I do this? How can I do that? Because all my students listen to the songs on social media and TikTok and this, that, and the third, and they listen to all these songs, and the teachers have a hard time, and I know I did too, have a hard time relating with their students because of the songs that are going around on social media and things like that. And we're not on a social media, excuse me, as much as they are. A question I have for you is that if you were to do this as a group, I love the group idea, by the way. I think that's a fabulous idea, especially for our younger composers in elementary school and maybe early middle school, depending on who you're working with. How would you incorporate this into a lesson or multiple lessons? How could you make this into a unit? How could you make this into a lesson?
Well, this goes right back to the very start of my teaching. When I came out of teacher training, I was kind of armed with all the solfège and all the French time symbols and all of that kind of stuff. And I interviewed for a job, and the music teacher that was the head of department, I was to be to be underneath one other teacher. She was not there at the interview because she was on a sabbatical year. When we came back for the pre-service week, it turns out that Angela was not going to be back until the first day of school. So I never got to meet the person that that was supposed to tell me what the curriculum was. So my first day of classes with the kids waiting outside my room, ready to find out who this new music teacher was, I went to Angela, said, "Good morning, my name's Richard McCready. I'm going to be teaching music with you. Please tell me what you want me to teach." And she said, "Richard, I don't care, so long as the kids are happy and creative." So I walked out of her room and down to my classroom, and I thought, okay, happy and creative. Let's start making stuff. And so I went in there and I found what instruments they wear, and I started to think, how can we use these to make noises, right? I don't know that kids have skill on instruments, as far as I'm concerned. If I put a stick in their hand and I put an orff instrument in front of them, they're just going to be able to bang on it right now. But I thought, well, what could we do to make the sound of the rain with this mallet and this orff instrument? How can you create something? How can you improvise to create something? And I would take the kids on walks around the town, and we would listen to stuff. We would listen to the sounds we heard. We would listen to the birds. We would listen to the traffic. We would listen to the sounds of people down at the market. And we would write all these things down. And then we would come back and we would try to recreate those with instruments and whatever we had. And before we kind of learned what a scale was or what a quarter note was, we were composing soundscapes about what we had heard down in the town. And I would have students work together and create compositions themselves in smaller groups. And I would guide kind of ideas of what I wanted them to recreate. And then they would go off and recreate that. And then I would go into things like I would take some what we call strip cartoons. Like I had this wonderful Peanuts cartoon in which there are no words. And it's just a story of Linus sitting with a wind-up musical box, just in nine pictures. And they had to take these nine pictures and create the story without any dialogue, but just with the instruments that they had. And again, each would come back and would present this. And what I started to realize was that because these kids were creative, they were happy. And because they were happy, they were creative. And the two things worked together. And there was a great happiness in creativity. And they just continued to love, to want to be guided in how to create music. And from there, we would get into songwriting. From there, we would, and for songwriting, we would then start to learn to play the chords that we needed for that. So what we were doing was using music to learn the skills that we needed to create our own music rather than to create the music of some long dead straight white guy. And so the ownership which I gave to the students was very important. And it really kept them coming back all the time to find out what we were going to create, what we were going to learn. And that's the way I've always taught, is that I think first and foremost through creativity. And if we need to learn a musical skill, we're going to learn it through making our own music rather than regurgitating somebody else's music. And so I think primarily of creation in my classroom. And I support that with other things such as recreation, the idea of learning something through a cover song, learning to listen to something and to put that together, but by using the skills that, that I've already taught to create our own material. I teach this through through listening to music, through decoding music by looking at it, through observation of musicians. And I've always found that if I'm enthusiastic about something, those kids are going to buy into that enthusiasm as well. There is such incredible, incredible, wonderful music out there that you don't have to rely on what the kids are hearing on TikTok or whatever. You as a musician have so much more experience than them, and you bring in stuff, and quite honestly, you know, I can sell them on anything with enthusiasm. And so looking at something which somebody else has created and looking at it as an example of their creativity. What was it that that person was going through to create that piece of music? Creates the personal connection for them as well to say, okay, what do I want to do to create that piece of music? And it doesn't matter if we're talking about a piece of Beethoven or a piece of Billie Eilish. We're going to find that what was the motivation for that person to create that, and then we can relate that ourselves to create our own music. And to me, that's always just kept the kids happy. And so even though, you know, my first day of teaching, I came home thinking, oh my gosh, what the heck situation have I got myself in? Because I have no curriculum. I have a head of department that just says she doesn't care. I don't know what I'm going to do. This is disaster. It got better every single day. And it's always been just the way I am now, that I, you know, creative and happy. And it works. I tell you, it works.
I wish I could go back in time and be in your classroom for even a day, because that sounds like such an incredible place to be. What an incredible philosophy.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I heard soundscapes and I immediately went back to my student teaching days and I was like, I remember this, because my mentor teacher at the time, I specifically remember there was a time where I was still, you know, student teaching. I was still learning how to be a teacher. And she took the kids out on a soundscape and she showed me the activity and she was like, I know you have to catch up on stuff for your classes. So you have because I had an observation from my college professor coming up, and she said, but here's the activity that we're doing, and if you have a chance, we can go outside with us. And I see the kids outside the window just listening and walking around, and I was like, this needs to happen more, especially with the fact that our students, technology is so evident, and I'm a huge person who loves technology, but in moderation. Technology is a great thing to have, and I'm glad you have these multiple mediums in your project, but also there's ways of just being creative by just listening to the sounds around you, just listening to the sounds around you, hearing those sounds that naturally occur.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something that was remarkable was that I did something very similar during COVID, during isolation. I sent the kids out of their own homes to listen to what was around them. And they created for themselves, I sent them out as well with video cameras or their phones or whatever they had, something where they could video things around. And so they came back and they created these little 1 minute videos of isolation and quiet. And they were so intent on finding these sounds that were there that were normally not there, that they missed when we have the normal hustle and bustle of normal life. And it was an extraordinary project. I loved it so much. I actually got the inspiration from a student at Lebanon High School in Lebanon, Ohio, who working with a dear friend of mine, Will Kuhn, her teacher there, she had created this project of herself skateboarding outside during COVID. And I thought that's such a brilliant idea that I was able to create that into a project for my students. And it gave them it gave them an alternate perception as well of going outside and seeing for yourself what this isolation is about, rather than just reading about it online or whatever, you know. So it was a great way for kids to experience something alternative, you know, in their perception of what this very strange year was about back there in 2020, 21.
I tell my kids all the time that they need to go out and touch some grass.
Yeah.
And this conversation has inspired me to, you know, when the weather gets warm, at least, mm-hmm. to definitely go out and try something like this. Where my school is located, it's suburban, but it's still maybe like a good 2-3 miles away from what you would consider more hustle and bustle. So, you know,
yeah,
my first thought would be, what can they hear when there's not much besides maybe passing cars and things like that? But again, we're so hooked on technology that we miss certain things. But again, like, at least, you know, like with Jess and I, at least, you know, we do remember a time before smartphones and tablets and all these things. So I can at least think back to, I mean, listen, birds flapping their wings and chirping, the wind, leaves blowing in the wind. I mean, just these things, but for some kids, that might not be something that is normal. I mean, that can even go into why, you know, folks who live in the city, you take them out to rural areas and they stay overnight. They're nervous because yeah. they hear nothing but animals and nature versus
their own thoughts versus yeah. hearing the city sounds.
Yes, yeah, city sounds, and then and then flip flop it. Then you have those in rural areas who end up staying in cities and they can't sleep because it is noise, always noise. So it's like both ends of the spectrum, if they experience the other end, that's so much creativity that they can gather.
I just if you can't see it, obviously, but I just raised my hand because I teach in a rural area, a very rural area, and I can only be in the city for a max of like 2 or 3 days. I went to Nashville over the summer, and it was a beautiful, beautiful place, especially for a music teacher like myself. Richard, I'll tell you this. I got to tour Quaverhead HQ. Amazing place to tour, whether you're a Quaver teacher or not. But being in that element of the metro city, I was like, living on me, I was staying on Music Row. I was like down the street from Fifth and Broadway. And the first thing I said was, I said, I am overstimulated by the sound. But I was in an area where it was not as loud. So thankfully I got to like walk around, and there was actually a coffee house like around the corner from the hotel I was staying at. And I just got to walk and just hear the sounds and not be focused on, oh my gosh, I gotta answer this next email, or I gotta answer this next phone call. Kids do not have that opportunity, I think, as often, because they think everything is right at their fingertips when it's really not. And I'm sure the three of us can relate. The only time I got excited for technology when I was a kid was when we saw that big old TV rolling into the room, and you saw that big old TV rolling into the room. Gabe's laughing right now because he knows what I'm talking about. And you're like, yeah, it's a movie day or whatever we're doing. Or the big old desktop computers before we had all these, like, yeah, I, like I said, I'm a big advocate for technology. I love my technology teacher. I love all the technology teachers I've gotten to work with. They're doing incredible things. However, creativity doesn't have to be just behind a screen. Which is why, like I said, I love these mediums that you have, Richard, where they can just pick up a guitar, they can pick up a piano, or they can do this. I have a keyboard in my room, and my kids, I don't let them turn it on, but there's sometimes where we'll play a music game, and one or two kids will just go up and start pretending like they're playing the piano or whatever. But it gives them that little bit of an outlet to say, like, I'm playing this or I'm doing that. I have kids as young as four that do that. I have some kids who come up and just want to start playing my piano. And as much as I am like, okay, I got to be the teacher and not let them touch my stuff, because one's kid does it and you allow it, they're all gonna want to do it. But it allows that creativity for students to open their minds to the sounds that they hear around them, which I think is beautiful, in the multiple mediums that you have in your project.
In fact, oh, I'm sorry,
Students,
Richard, go ahead. so I was going to say, students are naturally creative and they're naturally inquisitive. Unfortunately, what we do by telling them what to play, by telling them what notes to play and in what order to play them and what dynamic to play them in, we gradually increase inhibition. We gradually get to the point where the kid says, well, if I do this bit wrong, or if I do this bit wrong, or if I get this bit wrong, we inhibit their creativity. And we continue to put so much stuff that is going to lock them up in their musical expression that we create problems. I remember looking at a rubric many years ago for a teacher who has now since retired. And I was just so upset by it because she basically was starting the kids with all the points and taking off points for every single mistake that she noticed, including things like whether, the left hand was in the correct position and the right hand was in the correct position, and whether the kid was sitting correctly and stuff like that. All of these things where she was able to just basically poke holes in anything that the kid was doing, rather than starting at zero and saying, hey, you're doing this great. Let me give you points for this. Let me add, let me add, let me add. And a kind of a subtractive way of grading is really, really harmful, but a cumulative way of grading is much better. So we look at what the kids can start with, and then we build and we build and we build on that. And so, composition enables you to do that because you can find things all the time in a composition where you can ask a kid, why did you make that choice? Why did you choose to do this? And all of those things add to the kudos and the respect that you can give the kid for what they do, rather than saying, well, you got this note wrong or you got that note wrong, which I find to be kind of defeating. And so I would take something like, this idea of a soundscape project and look at this idea of, as you mentioned, rural or urban, and look at how different people have done this. I would certainly take something like, Vivaldi's Four Seasons. Look at that and see what the kids can find in it by listening, not by reading the program notes, not by reading what's on the back of the record, not by reading what's in an annotated score, which says, here the birds are singing, here the river is flowing. But what do they hear in that? And how can they then relate that to their own experience of the seasons? Or you take something like the Britten 4C interludes and you do the same thing. What is going on in there? At what point can we hear storms? At what point can we hear calm seas? And then you'd compare that and you'd take something like Gershwin's American in Paris and say, okay, here is an urban approach to that of the sounds that we're hearing. But in each of these cases, what was happening is that the writer, the composer, was using what was available to them. And so in Vivaldi's case, it was the instruments of the children that were in the hospital where he was teaching. And so he was able to write for what was there, right there. Today, you take a look at what instruments you have in your classroom and also what technology you have available and say, okay, let's write for that. Let's see what we've got. Britten had so much more at his disposal because he's writing for full orchestra, and the same thing with Gershwin. you know, Rahm Vivaldi, who's just writing for string instruments. But then Gershwin comes along and says, okay, I need car horns. What am I going to do? I'm going to go bring car horns in. And you've got car horns in there, which is wonderful. All right. So what do we do? What kind of sound do we need? How can we create that on an instrument, even if we're using it in an unorthodox way? What happens if I take that beater and I use the wrong end? And I slide it up the bars rather than hit the bars individually. And rather than say to a kid, oh, don't hold the beater that way, you're doing it wrong, you say to the kid, wow, that's incredible that you've done that, okay? And we never say to a child, don't do that, you might break it. Well, wait a second, what happens if you break the child, right? An instrument can be replaced, an instrument can be fixed, but destroying the creativity and creating inhibition in a child where they say, oh, I can't do that because Beethoven did it, so therefore I can't, right? Gershwin was so great. Vivaldi was so great. Britten was so great. I can never achieve that. No, 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 no. We show we can achieve just like that. It's just that those people happen to be a long way down the train line, right? They've been at this for a while, right? But you're 6 years old. You got a lot of years ahead of you, right? Let's get on that train line. Let's get that train moving. And you never know where those kids will go. And we find this with the kids in the Young Composers Project. You know, sometimes they get in touch with us after a couple of years, and we find that they're now, you know, composition majors at university, or that they're having their works premiered by some professional ensemble. Or we find that they're being asked by studios to produce music for them. And what we did at the time is we didn't take that production and compare it to something like a Pharrell, or compare it to a Brian Eno, or compare it to a Trevor Horn. What we said is, you know, this is what is great for where you are right now. And the same thing with composition. We don't take a composition and say, well, you know, Beethoven would have done it this way. And, oh my gosh, you used a consecutive fifth. We don't do that, right? We say, this is where we encourage things. And you know, it works in those showcases. Those kids are all happy. Like I said, we just tap into that creativity and they're happy about it. And that's a beautiful thing to see.
I'm going to use part of your what you said as a quote. An instrument can be replaced. What if it happens if you break the child? I'm going to write that down and put it somewhere, because that's like, that just like hit me in a whole different way. And I kind of knew that, but like, I never knew how to word it. So thank you for wording that, Richard. I also got kind of excited when you said Four Seasons, because my kids know about Four Seasons from Quaver's March Madness, Music Madness activity. And my kids, like, some of them were like, oh my gosh, I love this song, or I love this. And I'm like, guess what? This piece was written 400 years ago. And they're like, what? Like, they get all excited.
If you take something and they write about winter as well,
yeah,
you know, then it buys so much more into it. And as Gabe so rightly pointed out, you take that according to where their locale is. You think, how is winter in Garrett County different from winter in Baltimore City? They're very, very different things.
Or even on the Eastern Shore.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, yeah. It's so beautiful to think about those options. And what I love about our state is we do have that multiplicity of experience from the urban areas, such as Baltimore City and Annapolis and even DC, out to, you know, the mountainous regions out in Garrett County, down to the shore and to the, you know, to the difference that you have of a child's experience in Allegheny County versus Wicomico County. It's all beautiful. So I would definitely tap into that. And what would be lovely as well is if you have like a twin school somewhere else, somebody that, you know, maybe you've met through MMEA at a conference, somebody that's in a different part of the state, and compare things, you know, and children's experience could be fascinating. So I would tap into that idea. We don't have to always be just about Central Maryland. Doesn't have to be just Baltimore, Howard, Montgomery. There's so much more experience and beauty out there.
Lots of ideas I've done something similar with that, the partner school thing, more for a performance aspect with different choirs doing different pieces of music and also sharing the differences in, again, their locale. And in this case, it was with a school in West Virginia, because their teacher was someone I went to school with. Many know I went to, even though I'm a Maryland native, I went to Marshall University out in Huntington, West Virginia. So I've got some colleagues all throughout West Virginia who I still contact. And we did that for about half a year. And it was interesting the differences that we were able to share and piggyback off of. I mean, again, we can go on all day, all day. My next question for you, Richard, is this. How can Maryland music educators get involved beyond just submitting projects for students?
Oh, I would love to have Maryland adjudicators help us out with listening to compositions. You don't have to have a degree in composition. I certainly don't. You just have to have a love of creativity and a love of students. Just like if your child brings home a piece of art from school and you sit there and you talk about it with your child, you don't have to have a degree in art to connect with your child about that piece of work that they've done. You can encourage them, you can talk to them about it, and you can put it on the refrigerator. What a great, great thing. Okay. It's the same thing with music. The students are always going to look up to you because you have experience, because you are a musician. You talk the lingo. You use words like crescendo and tempo, which obviously show that you know what you're talking about in terms of music. You think things through from a musical point of view. So I would love to encourage, please, members of the MGMTA to please let us know if you're willing to help out, if you're willing to listen to a handful of compositions. And we have a special form that you fill out through Submittable, which guides you through areas to think about in the composition and to give positive feedback. I like the way you did this. Tell me about how you did this. This was a great idea. This is something new. These sort of ideas, the positive feedback is beautiful. And then we don't actually score anything. We don't give points. What we do is we say either this is ready to go to a masterclass, or let's resubmit next year. Think about some of these ideas to let the composition grow and come back next year and submit something. And so that's really the only decision we make there. And then what we do is if something has been adjudicated by three people and they all say that needs to go on to the masterclass, it's in, it's there, right? If three people from Maryland or from Focusrite Novation or also from Time, which I hadn't mentioned yet, Time is a nonprofit organization that I am a part of and very proud to be a part of, technology and music education. This is a nonprofit where we train teachers at conferences on how to integrate technology into their music education, into their music teaching. And in fact, we will be at our Maryland conference in March. This is the first year that members of Time will be flying in from all over the country to give sessions on technology and music education. So we have a number of folks from Time as well who freely give of their time. Sorry about that. They give of their time to help with going through these projects. And adjudicate kind of feels like a very, very formal word for it, but it's not really adjudication. As I said, it's giving positive feedback and just telling us whether we think we can go ahead and put that in the showcase. In the masterclass.
I think this is a great way for teachers to get involved beyond just submitting. I know for myself, I'm going to definitely try to, Richard, I'm going to reach out to you, but I'm going to definitely try to be involved as an adjudicator in some way, shape, or fashion. To anyone who's listening and you think that you're a Maryland teacher and you're saying, hey, I would love to get involved in this project, there is information that's already sent out. And as Richard has said, the submission window is already open. And so you have until February 28th at 5 p.m. to submit online. If you want more information, please make sure to go to our website and we will put this in the description for the episode as well. Go to mdmea.org and search under educators and look for the Young Composers Project. If you have any questions, please reach out to the MMEA staff. There will be an email on the Young Composers Project page, or you can reach out to myself, Gabe, or Richard. We are all on the board and staff page as well on ndmda.org. And kind of a nice little plug, Richard, that you were talking about the conference, because conference is still happening on March 7th and 8th. And the early bird discount, I believe, Gabe, correct me if I'm wrong, is closing on February 14th. So if you want to get involved and you want that early bird discount, please make sure to go to on our website. And I don't know about you, Richard and Gabe, but we have seen incredible sessions that we are noticing in classroom music and all of our components as well, including one friend on here who is going to be conducting an ensemble. And he is smiling at me right now because I know I was going to mention it to him. But Gabriel Gray is going to be conducting our All-State Elementary Demo Chorus at annual conference. So if you have students that you want to get involved in the Young Composers Project or an elementary demo choir with an incredible educator that we have as our president of MGMTA, please to make sure to get signed up for conference as soon as possible. Now, there still will be registration open after February 14th, but if you want to save some moolah, some money, then you've got to sign up by February 14th.
Yeah, I would mention that you've mentioned our Young Composers Project website. I would also say that we have resources on there for people who are not sure how to start teaching composition. If you click all the way down to the bottom of that website, you'll find a small series of resources that we've put there. We've kept it very short to be deliberate, so that it's not, too big of a menu of things to choose from. When you go to the diner and they have like a 16-page menu and you're just like, what am I going to choose? And you end up not eating because there's too much there. So we've given you some choices there, things to look through. And also on there as well, of course, is the email address. You can send an email if you're interested in getting more information or you would like to sign up, please, to adjudicate, to listen to some of our compositions. That would be wonderful. If you think that you are, experienced or more comfortable with looking at notation or listening to songs or listening to productions, please go ahead and say that. We have a number of people who may not consider themselves to be particularly au fait with all the ins and outs of production, but they do understand songwriting, and they have that personal connection to songwriting. Or we have, some people who, really do absolutely nothing to do with notation, but are really, really strongly skilled in production. We want to hear from you. Okay, music is not about notation. Music is about so much more. And sometimes, unfortunately, we tend to look at people's skill with notation as their skill as a musician, which is, of course, completely unfounded and wrong. And we could talk for another 3 hours about that. But please, if you're interested in songwriting, if that's something you like to do yourself on the weekend and you don't think you have the theory skills to judge somebody's notation composition, but you do have the skills to understand somebody's lyrics and their chord progression and all of those things. Please, we'd love to hear from you. And if you have skills in production, recording, please do let us know because we're very, very interested in bringing some more Maryland teachers into this project. And I think once teachers see the process, I think then they will encourage more and more students to become part of it as well. I'd love to extend this thing to five master classes, six master classes, seven. That would be amazing. We will do as many master classes as is correct for the number of students that deserve to be recognized. That this is not a matter of, sorry, there's only three trumpets in the band. This is a matter of, we, you know, if you're there and you're creating, and we want to encourage you, you're going to get that positive feedback. And so that's huge. No child gets forgotten about. No child gets a rejection letter. Everybody ends up with a positive experience of this. And every teacher as well gets the positive experience of seeing what their students are doing, because it's through the teachers that this composition really starts and gets encouraged. So that's a, you know, that's an important and I don't know the word, but it's an important part of it. The word is not there.
Hey, you know what? Sometimes words can't really properly describe certain things. So, I mean, we can just leave it at that and let others ponder on that. And before we close, folks, I'll just say this. I have a current third grader who I know has been a musical lover ever since kindergarten. And it all began the week of May the 4th, which Star Wars fans, you know what that is. And I showed him in his class at the time a video called Cello Wars. So elementary music educators, you probably know what this is. And he was so enamored by it that he started mimicking the moves of playing that cello. And he said that day, I want to play that instrument. So then fast forward to now, he's in third grade. And my co-teacher and I, we gave a creative assignment. We gave a creative assignment where at the end they had to come up with a short rap. And it was insane to see what he was able to do, not just in his group, but outside. We gave more chances for people to go up. Maybe they created something else. And this kid can improvise. He can improvise like nobody's business. I had to pull him aside and say, did you just come up with that off the fly? And he said, yeah. And when he left that room, he said, I'm going to be a cello player and I'm going to be a rap god. And I said, yes, you are.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
So much.
Yep. So most definitely, you never know. You may have those kids that just, they have that need or that desire to create. And then there's something that gives them permission to do so. So again, that's our impact.
I believe improvisation is hugely, hugely important. And unfortunately, we tend to push kids away from it because of this reliance on the printed page. Unfortunately, that reliance on the printed page is very strong in Western European culture. But when you look at the extent of other cultures which have come to this country, and how important improvisation is to those cultures, we don't encourage it enough. And I think it's huge. And I love to hear that story of this boy improvising and wanting to then have that skill and seeing himself in the future as a rap god. I love that so much. Thank you for encouraging that, because that is hugely important. You know, when I get kids freestyling in my class and they look at me as if, do you think this is going to be allowed? And I'm like, yeah, go for it. I love to hear you freestyle. I love to hear you create. And somebody once said to me, they said, how come all your kids improvise? You know, and I said, it's because I don't tell them it's difficult. And that's it. When people come along and say, well, you got to be John Coltrane or you got to be Louis Armstrong to improvise. Then they say, well, you know, I can't do that. Similar thing to if we say you've got to be Bach or you've got to be Paul Simon to write a song. You've got to be Bach to compose. No, just, you know, improvisation is a wonderful thing. Kids naturally do it. If you take the idea of a soundscape and you say, how do we improvise to create that sound? Make it up as you go along. We're encouraging improvisation. And it's so important that we don't make it difficult, or we don't say that it's difficult. Okay. Yes, it is, you know, It is difficult to improvise over a Charlie Parker tune. I'll give you that. Okay. But that's again a long, long, long way down the road. Right. So I'm so glad that you're introducing improvisation to those students because to me it's just big. I love it. Thank you, Gabe, for doing that.
Most definitely. And I intend to do it way, way more, as most educators, one of our kryptonites are release and control. That
Yes.
is something on a personal level that I have intentionally been doing, been more mindful of listen, let the kids work, let them talk.
And I think I was released from that on my first day of teaching. I
That's
think that Angela gave me the greatest gift ever, even though on the first day I was thinking, what the heck? I've just gone to music college. I've just gone to teacher training college. I've done all this work, and you're telling me it doesn't matter. And it was the greatest gift ever because I haven't been bound by the constraints of having to get the notes right. There is a time and a place for that, but it's not everything. And,
Yeah.
allowing ourselves to get rid of that control, to take that darn white stick and throw it in the trash sometimes, right? And let the kids make their own music rather than always telling them what to do. There's got to be a balance.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
yeah,
You both
I don't know.
reminded me to text a parent because one of my parents, not one of my parents, one of my kids came up to me and said, "Miss Windsor, I wrote a song." And it just clicked in my brain when you were talking about your student, Gabe. I was like, "Oh, wait." So I texted that student who is a colleague of, or at parent who is a colleague of mine, and I said, "Hey, so and so told me they created a song. Can you please send it to me or record it ASAP?" So I think I have something that's super beneficial for her. It literally just clicked in my brain.
That's
So
wonderful.
I'm really excited to see where this project goes and who gets involved in this project, because I think both of us have students that would be beneficial for this program, as well as many students throughout the state.
100%.
100%.
Yep.
So Richard, thank you again so much for joining us. It has been great working with you so far this year, and we look forward to future collaborations. Thank you again so much. Jess, again, always great partner in crime, great co-host. Thank you for all that you give. And before we do officially close, everyone, I do want to give just one correction. So when it comes to the registration for the conference, so pre-registration actually is open until Wednesday, February the 26th. So you have a little more time. However, the February 14th Valentine's Day deadline that Jess was referring to, that is actually to book a hotel in the MMEA
Okay.
block for the two adjoining hotels with the convention center, which I believe is the Hilton and the Sheraton. I don't believe
Yes.
they've shut down yet. So
We have
you
a
got
best
to the point.
practice in my school, own our mistakes. I'm owning my mistakes. So thank you, Gabe.
No, you're good. Listen, we all have dates and deadlines, and sometimes they get mixed up. But yeah, the 14th, if you are planning to stay more than one day and you want a hotel room at a cheaper rate, definitely make sure that your MMEA membership is up to date. That's a big one too. And you've got till the 14th for the hotel block and the 26th for pre-registration. But again, like Jess said, after that, you can still register at the door. It's just a little bit more. So we hope to see you all there. We hope to be seeing and hearing the creations of your students. And remember, just take it all step by step.
With some skips along the way.
Thank you, everybody. Stay warm, and we will be chit-chatting with y'all again very, very soon.
Go be creative.